Thanks for tuning in to the Becker's Dental and DSO Review podcast. This episode shares some of the insights explored at Becker's Dental and DSO Review virtual event. You can view this session, access more podcasts, and find other great resources on our website, beckershospitalreview.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Dental plus DSO virtual event. We are so excited to have you join us for today's session titled, How DSOs Can Improve Practice Acquisition and Grow in Times of Uncertainty. As dental practices continue to open and resume more normal operations, the pandemic continues to loom largely and will affect how the industry evolves in the next several years. I'm Laura Dierda with Becker's Healthcare, and I'll be your moderator for today's panel. It is my pleasure to introduce our panelists. We have Matt Zubiller, the Chief Growth Officer of Smile Brands, Lee Feenberg, Chief Operating Officer of Mid-Atlantic Dental Partners, Jenna Brady, Director of Recruiting at Signature Dental Partners, and Paul Bernard, Senior Vice President of Finance and Process Improvement at Smile Brands. Before we begin, I would like the panelists to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their background and organization. Lee, can we start with you?
Sure. I'm Lee, and my background actually is the Swamp from the University of Florida. I'm really excited to participate in the panel today. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to some good conversation.
Thank you. And Matt?
Yeah, my name is Matt Zubiller. I'm the Chief Growth Officer at Smile Brands. I'm here in San Diego, and as part of Smile Brands, my job is really figuring out how best to help grow our business and our practices. And we do that through a variety of different ways and support. So looking forward to today's conversation and talking about what's to come.
Fantastic. And Paul?
Hi, Laura. Good morning, everyone. From Irvine, not so sunny Irvine today. Paul Bernard, I'm Senior Vice President of Finance and Process Improvement. And I think that pulling off of Matt's thread, I guess part of my job, or a big part of my job, is figuring out how to operationalize and scale the growth ideas for the business and support our operations with process improvement, process excellence, and analytics.
Fantastic. And Jenna, could you tell us a little bit about yourself as well?
Absolutely. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, everybody. Good morning. Happy to be here. Excited. My name is Jenna Brady. I'm the Director of Recruiting with Signature Dental Partners, a growing dental support organization in the Southwest and Pacific Northwest United States. I'm coming here today from Phoenix, Arizona, where we're based out of, and excited to be a part of the panel, excited to connect with these other fantastic professionals and talk about where, you know, we really see some great opportunity moving forward for the dental industry.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all. We're really excited to have such a great panel here today. Let's jump into the questions. My first question is, what is your outlook for the dental industry today? Paul, let's start with you, and then I would love to hear from Lee and Jenna as well.
Sure. I'd say at Smile Brands, our outlook is bullish, and principally because our business model is really centered around how do you activate patients into care, right? So a lot of Americans, 40% of Americans, aren't in regular dental care. So when we look at our opportunity space and we think about it, for us, it's just a lot of greenfield opportunity figuring out how to get people into regular dental care. So on balance, I think as long as that remains the case where a lot of Americans aren't regularly visiting the dentist, I think there's reason for optimism, obviously provided you orient your business model to attract and bring those people into a dental environment. So generally bullish, I think certainly on the patient side, and I think there's some other aspects of the industry from an M&A perspective that I know you're going to hit that perhaps I'm a little less bullish on, but it'll be interesting to hear Matt's take on that.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, Matt, we'll discuss several of the trends with him as well. Lee, could you also give your perspective here? What's your outlook on the industry?
Sure. I think it's very, very good opportunity over the next 10 years to see novel treatments incorporated in the practices. I think what we've witnessed, much like during the previous recession, is we weren't significantly adversely impacted by patient demand at the beginning of the pandemic. When we were shut down, there was a lot of patients that were looking for care and they were confused and they had nowhere to go. So the patient demand was there. It gave us an opportunity to innovate, which I think is important in dentistry because I think it's always lagging behind medicine. And incorporating teledentistry overnight was something that's probably overdue, but it was a good opportunity for us to do so. And there's a lot of other things like that are important for us over the next 10 years. And that's why I'm so optimistic. We have a lot of technology that we can leverage, a lot of other procedures to bring in. And I think COVID was not the catalyst because it's been in motion for a little while, but it actually enabled us to take a few steps further in terms of the merger of dental and medicine. And there's a lot of articles in terms of how having a healthy mouth and going to the dentist is actually advantageous against COVID and other things that we're going to combat in the future. So I think it opened a good conversation between medicine and dental. And when we were disregarded at the beginning of the pandemic, and that includes some disciplines being completely disregarded, it really gave us the ability to show that, hey, the dentists are going to work every day wearing the PPE. They're just as brave as the physicians going into the urgent care facilities because we do have those aerosols that are generated in hygiene. But my teams, and I'm sure their teams as well, they wanted to go in. They wanted to take care of their patients. And I think it showed the commitment from the dentists and the dental office teams to their patients. And I'm really looking forward to how that translates in the future because we've had the opportunity to upgrade equipment, technology, different software. So there's a lot of good things coming for us.
Fantastic. And I think you're spot on. I'm still trying to make sure I get all my mutes and unmutes on. So thank you for bearing with me. Jenna, do you agree with what Paul and Lee have laid out here? Do you have any other thoughts to add in terms of your outlook for the dental industry?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, really. I'm incredibly optimistic moving forward for the dental industry. You know, we look at where, you know, our clinicians and our practice team members and those who are out there in the offices working and serving the communities and connecting with the patients have, you know, really just risen to the occasion. And I think it's been phenomenal to see where that's provided us all with glimpses into where that opportunity is for us to evolve as an industry and expand our contributions, you know, from the clinical perspective and, you know, just from the continual connections that we make in our communities and establishing, you know, those connections with our patients.
Great, that's a great point. And now, Matt, I want to turn it over to you. How do you anticipate dental practice acquisitions will trend in the next 12 to 24 months? Do you have anything to add as well to this outlook conversation?
Well, sure. You know, I do think it's a bit of a crystal ball. When you are able to experience something like this, where there's very few people who actually have experience with pandemics and what they actually mean and the impact of everything we're doing from the economy to the way we practice to how acquisitions work, essentially the rug got pulled out from many, many people in March when this happened. And obviously it's impacted people in a very negative way. And also at the same time created opportunity for change, to try different things. I look at acquisitions and I think there's really two stories to tell. There are many people who were building their practice to get it to the next level, to sell it and then move on, right? And they were taking advantage of great valuations and a really hot industry that was interested in paying more for that. And I think this next step that's happened has kind of created a bit of a realization that it's really about the fundamentals. Do you have a really strong practice? Do you know how to grow? And if you don't, how can you affiliate with somebody or work with organizations who can help you grow? And so I look at the next 12 to 24 months as really a return to those foundations. And so we have a lot of uncertainty and people who have gone out and gotten that panoply of different three-letter acronyms to the the PPE acquisition, trying to figure that out, to PPP loans and the EIDLs, and it's a whole alphabet soup. And trying to navigate that is a really, really hard. One of the fundamental measures we had for assessing acquisitions was trying to help people understand what their EBITDA is, what their essentially their earnings profile looks like. And how do you account for that when people are shut down for 3 or 4 months, right? Or people who actually tried to stay in practice. And I look at those folks in dental who were there for emergencies, were there for essential care, and you know, took on PPP loans to help make sure that their staff were still engaged and could, you know, be paid for the work that they do. So how do you look back and try to evaluate that for go forward, moving forward on acquisitions? And that's a challenge. On top of that, payers, they're experiencing, I'm lucky enough to be able to work with our team on figuring out how to interact with payers. And many have stepped up to help pay and support for PPE, and many have not. And that's been a challenge because it's puts another burden on the practices to take care of that. And so when we look at technology, Lee mentioned this, and Paul's been a big partner with me on this, is how do we bring technology through to our practice to help support them? So we've been experimenting, kind of forced into the trying something different. And we've brought in teledentistry. At first we said, well, this is gonna be really transformative. It's gonna change the way we practice. And teledentistry is interesting because it hasn't impacted general dentistry in a way that maybe we thought of, but perhaps orthodontics impacts that. So as an acquired practice or an acquisition practice, you look at orthodontics, you look at specialty growth, you look at ways to be able to expand what you're doing. Those become more attractive in the future over the next 12 and 24 months.
Got it. That's fascinating to think about all those different factors going into, you know, what dental practices are thinking about and how their strategy might need to change, especially over the next few years because of this pandemic. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Lee, do you have anything to add here? Are you seeing similar trends as Matt laid out or something different?
I agree with what Matt said. I think there's a lot of affiliation opportunities right now. Unfortunately, not everybody was set up to weather the storm well. So depending upon how long it was going to last, it just got worse and worse for a lot of people. Some people hung in there, and then depending upon where they lived, it was a lot more difficult. So the solo sites and even some of the smaller groups were really struggling. And I think it shows the benefit of being part of a team, being part of a larger organization, having those resources and the backing behind you to actually weather something like this so that you can come out the other side of it. So even the solo sites or the small groups that did weather it, there's been a lot of conversations and communications from them regarding wanting to make a move so that they can be part of something and that they can, now's the right time. It was rough on them and they're ready to make a transition. But also what Matt said, you've got the valuation part of it, which is a little bit hinky right now because of shutting down for a few months. So I'm sure he's having a lot of fun conversations right now as well. But I think there's a lot of opportunities out there, more opportunities even than there were pre-COVID. So you've got a lot of stuff to look at and it's about finding the right fit.
Got it. So it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of desire by dental practices to join some of the larger chains and other organizations to really capitalize on the benefits that those types of organizations bring to them and economies of scale. Matt, from your perspective, what which dental practices are the most attractive for acquisitions today?
Well, I look at it in that there are different reasons why people affiliate, right? What are the expectations that those folks have for their next step with an acquisition? Why are they doing it? What's their goal? And some folks just are at a point in their career where they're ready to pass the torch, and we can help them through that process. Others are earlier on, and they wanna grow, but they don't know how to. We were talking with an organization in Dallas, and this gentleman who had built his practice was excited about the opportunity to talk to operators who know how to expand his hygiene or help pull him into specialty, understand how to deal with supplies, how to negotiate with the right labs. And he was looking for that guidance. There's another a person we were working with, and she was wanting to understand, well, look, I'm happy with the practice I have today. I think I run it really well, but I want to own more of them at the same time. And was looking for a sub-DSO model where she can have ownership interest. So I think people look for opportunities and to affiliate for different reasons. And as long as you're aligned around that, it's what's important. One of the things we have is, you can see behind Paul, you have this notion of smiles for everyone, is a relationship that drives what we call the win-win, right? We want to obviously be able to grow as an organization, and bringing your practice into our portfolio helps, into our family helps. But unless you know what you're trying to accomplish, either expanding your top line, being able to increase your margin, be able to create better experience for your patients, leverage technology for better communications and process improvement, some of the great things that Paul has done. Those are the things that we can help do, but it comes from what your goals are as an organization. So those practices that really understand how they want to grow over the next several years are the ones that we can have great conversations to then deliver on that.
So what I'm hearing is, a lot of the practices, as long as they have their goals in mind and understand, you know, where they are within their trajectory of building their group and what they want to go to, you're able to work with them in order to get there, which is fantastic. Jenna or Lee, do you have anything you want to tag in there? Any other thoughts?
Lee, you're welcome to jump in if you'd like.
No, I echo his sentiments. My philosophy is really the same as it's always been. It's not about how many offices we have. It's about the type of offices that we have. And for me, it's about perfect fit. Whether that's the perfect fit of a group or the perfect fit of a solo site, are they aligned with the mission, vision, and values? Because the most important part of the dental office, it really is the provider. You know, so when we're partnering with somebody, I'm looking for somebody that we actually want to partner with, that believes in what we're doing, that wants to be with us for a long time, and is going to bring his patient base with him, and we're going to be able to do some innovative stuff together. So I'd much rather focus on having the right people than more people, because if you get the wrong fit, that's just going to end up in somebody that's not going to be around, and that's no good, you know, because what you're affiliating with is the dentist, because the connection to the patients is the dentist. So I'm looking for somebody that wants to run with us for a while.
I think there's just a lot of options that folks have there, right, in being able to choose. And of course, if you've got a good practice that increases those options. But I think you need to really understand, you know, what to Lee's point, what's the right culture fit? And, you know, do you want to take on more specialty work? Do you want to take on more patients? Do you want to take on more hygiene? Do you want to leverage technology?
I think it's important to pick up on what Lee and Matt said. It's important that physician or doctor or dentist, rather, know thyself, right? And it really, really is important. And I don't, from my perspective, if you really understand what your objectives are, and we were talking about what makes great targets, great acquisitions, these are ultimately two-way partnerships. And so, you know, if you don't feel like it's a fit, if either side doesn't feel like it's going to be a win, it's better to say, though, we'll affiliate with another organization that perhaps has taken a different track. I think Lee made a great point. It's not about the number of deals. It's about making sure we get deals that fit. And you know, dentistry is a people business first and foremost. All of our assets, for the most part, get up, walk out the door, go home, wake up in the morning, and decide to come back in. So it's really a cultural business, and you really have to understand and ask questions and dig into the cultural fit part.
That's a great point. And obviously, like you mentioned, a two-way street. So thank you so much. Now I want to pivot the discussion just a little bit to look at trends in dental and dentist recruitment. Jenna, how are you thinking about dentist recruitment and practice growth today?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm very excited. You know, I think that these opportunities, especially unprecedented opportunities, or times rather, are those chances when we can really look at finding or making, you know, connections that are going to help us moving forward. So, you know, something for Signature Dental Partners, you know, being dentist led, dentist founded and dentist owned, you know, we, our values have, you know, remained the same. And for that, you know, we want to make sure that we're attracting doctors to our team that are aligned with the types of practices that we're partnering with. Reason being, I think that the pandemic really created this kind of spark in the doctors that are, you know, have their own practices to say, hey, listen, you know, I love what I've built, but this would be a great time to partner with somebody who I am aligned with, who I can continue to practice, but can provide me with that support. And as I think about whether it be, you know, succession or growth opportunities, I want to partner with a DSO or a group that is going to be helping me to find somebody and bring somebody on board and has a robust pipeline of top tier candidates to present to me so we can find the best possible fit to continue that, you know, to something that's aligned with that doctor's intentions for what they want to do at this point or, you know, over the coming years. So, you know, for me, it's kind of twofold, looking at for our existing practices, touching base with our doctors and reviewing with them to see, hey, you know, has anything changed for you? You know, I mean, understandably, this has, you know, shaken us all to the core in a lot of senses. And I think that being able to touch base with them and make sure that we're prioritizing our plans for growth and succession accordingly is key. And, you know, the other part of that is really the pipeline building. So for me, you know, I have not slowed down in the communication that I've had with the doctors, the associate dentists in the community, you know, whether it be existing doctors that were, you know, working and were found that they weren't able to get keep on board with the practices where they were at prior to the pandemic, or if they, you know, I've spoken with a lot of doctors who see it as this is a time for them to make that change. You know, it is that kind of turbulent situation where sometimes that's just the best time to really find what you're looking for, and to also see what you're really looking for, you know, for yourself. So making those connections, maintaining that communication, and, you know, prioritizing building pipelines for our doctors so that when that opportunity comes, we can present them with doctors who are aligned with what we're all looking to build together. So.
Got it. And do you get the sense that the pipelines for the most part are strong today, or are there areas where, you know, you're a little bit nervous or there might be some weak pipelines currently? What trends, I guess, in whether it's healthcare or just the overall market are influencing whether, you know, those pipelines of new physicians or new dentists coming in, you know, are there and available as you would want them to be?
Well, I know at least for Signature Dental Partners and for us, we've had a great level of success with hiring doctors, even, you know, since June, really since the practices were able to start reopening. We've been hiring doctors in every state for, you know, various reasons. And I think that it's been something that I found from a pipeline perspective, there's actually more candidates because a lot of, especially if you look at the timing from in springtime, the doctors that were transitioning out of residency or transitioning out of dental school that either had jobs lined up that fell through or, you know, their jobs were, they weren't even able to find any because as we, you know, people, as the pandemic was encroaching on us, the doctors that may have been looking were not any longer. And so a lot of them who would have had jobs in May or, you know, even back in December prior to when they graduated were still looking, you know, come time for their licensure to get issued, that was all delayed. So it really kind of timing wise all aligned with us reopening. And I found that there were a lot of doctors that were seeking opportunities. And so the pipelines are definitely there, and connecting with those doctors during that time is key.
Interesting. Thank you so much for going through that. Paul, I saw you nodding your head. Are you seeing similar things, or what is your
opinion? I think that's right. And never waste a good crisis, right? And I think the pandemic has caused all of us, and most certainly dentists, that it's been a little bit disruptive to them planning their career track, right? And so, you know, if you traditionally come out of dental school, you join in a private practice, become an associate, grow with that practice. I think the concept of, you know, affiliating with the DSO, the stability, the opportunities that provides, the different sort of geographic reach as well that you can get, the different opportunities. And I think in particular, when you combine sort of a climate that makes people say, well, maybe I should think about what I thought about doing 2-3 years ago might not be the same today. And then you take what Lee and Matt were talking about, you know, teledentistry, technology, you know, continuing education, a lot of the opportunities that DSOs provide for those, and the delivery of those things in very unique ways. I think it becomes a pretty compelling case for folks to think about, you know, coming out of dental school or being, you know, earlier in their career and to think about affiliation, because for us, at least, if you want to grow and if you want to grow your practice and grow your business, we actually want to do everything we can to support that, right? So Matt talked about the win-win proposition, and it's very true that when we position our value proposition to docs, you know, we position, hey, our commitment is we're going to take your paycheck and the growth of your paycheck very seriously, and we ask in return that you take the growth of the total business and come along with us just as seriously, right? So when you're up front and you say, hey, if you want to grow and if you want to help us grow, then this is the place for you. I think when you're crystal clear on the value proposition, I think that's another key to really making sure that you align the right docs with the right opportunities.
Got it. And from your perspective, what are you seeing some of the best practices or best, I guess, dental groups or practices do to get the competitive edge in their markets? Paul, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. Look, I think dentistry is all about patient experience. So certainly, I'm not going to talk about clinical innovation. It's really not my bailiwick. But what I would tell you is, if you are focused on the best practices that I see are the ones that are focused on meeting the patient where they are, convenience, pricing, those sorts of things, and really thinking about the patient experience from the outside in, right? So technologies like teledentistry, and our application of it, using it, piloting currently, we're doing remote teledentistry, ortho teledentistry, which really extends a practice that may be geographically separated from others. It really extends the opportunities for those GPs to engage in broader services. Things like that, I think, enhance the convenience for the patients. And anytime you do that, it lends itself towards activating more people into dental care, which is, if I go back to the beginning, we talked about, you know, why am I bullish and why should we be bullish? It's, we've got tons of opportunity to activate people back into care. So I think the best ones are ones that understand that and are open to experimenting and piloting and working on how to expand the services and the convenience. And quite frankly, the affordability. And I know Matt's got some very important views to share on the payer landscape. From my perspective, I'll just say that the affordability, the consumer-driven nature of dentistry, I think is only going to accelerate. And I think the best practices out there that understand this are figuring out ways to make dentistry more and more affordable, and much more accessible and easier to pay.
Got it. Fantastic. We do have are winding up here, but Matt, I want to throw it to you to see if you have any thoughts to share. As Paul mentioned, on the payer market, would love to hear those.
Sure. I mean, when you look at the trends within dentistry, there is a long-term trend towards greater consolidation over time. And I've been in healthcare for 20 years, and I saw that happen more on the medical side, where it, the biggest driver for consolidation for health systems was really one thing, and that was payer rate increases, right? Because payers got bigger, they took more leverage within the industry, and therefore it was much more difficult to negotiate with them over time. And so then health systems grew and consolidated over time to help support that, which all, I think, in the end, forced us to be much more effective and process-oriented and create much more better patient experience because of that. I think dentistry is on the same trajectory, right? And what we're going to find in that COVID ended up being, a windfall in many ways for payers this year, because there was much less utilization than anticipated. But next year is going to be really hard when renewals come up and the payrolls are hit, because there's unemployment that's higher and there's fewer people who are paying into premiums. And so that's going to put more pressure on payers to perform. We're going to put more pressure on doctors to be more efficient with the work that they do. And so it's those bigger organizations that can better represent and help potentially negotiate better rates, but frankly, provide better technology that can be reduce the cost to serve. And Paul talks about this all the time, but if we can reduce the cost of our claims, that helps not just us, but it helps our payer partners we're working with. And so folks that are out there, Cigna, for example, has really stood out there as an organization that's created a dashboard that says, here are the things that are really most important to me that we can work on together that will result in greater payer rate increases. Your ability to be in an affiliated partnership actually helps you better achieve those things.
That's a great point and fascinating to think about and look at in terms of what 2021 could bring from the payer side. Thank you for going through that with us, Matt. Now, as we wrap up our panel, I have one more question for all panelists. And Jenna, I want you to start. What's most exciting about the dental industry heading into 2021?
There are so many things about heading into the dental industry in 2021. I mean, I think that I don't know that anybody expected, you know, coming into this, that we would be able to bounce back so quickly, come together so well, and gain the perspectives for really the opportunity to expand our impact in this industry. It's never happened. And I think that those new perspectives that we've had light shed upon are going to be really exciting as we pursue, you know, the coming year, and even just, I would even say over the next 5 years, I think a lot of things are going to change and expand, and our clinicians are going to have a lot more opportunity to serve their communities and make an impact, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Fantastic. Lee, what are you excited about for next year?
There's a lot to be excited about. You know, I'm a big proponent of the best way forward is always together. And I think that really took on new meaning for me during the pandemic, because I've never seen such collaboration between the DSOs before. I have friends in many of them and colleagues in many of them. And the conversations that we were able to have at the beginning of this were truly helpful to me. And hopefully mine were helpful to them too. But the sharing of best practices, brainstorming together and coming up with solutions, and, you know, there's a lot to be gained from shared experiences and adversity like we all went through together. And I think it brought the DSOs closer together, and we're more united in our vision and open to collaborating and sharing with each other for the advancement of dentistry in the future. And that's really exciting to me, because we can do so much more together by uniting the industry that we're in and working as partners to integrate dental, to integrate medicine. You know, one of the things that I've seen, I go on LinkedIn from time to time, and I see Smile Brands is always on there, and Steve Built, and the hashtags with Dental Emergency and Dental ER, and all of us kind of got together, and we were all doing that, and that went across so many DSOs all over the country, because we were all in the same situation, and we all had similar feelings, and we used each other to come up with ideas that would allow us to take care of the patients, because what you said earlier is spot on, that this whole business is about personal relationships and the patient experience. And the relationship between the patient and the dentist is probably stronger than it's ever been. The relationship from DSO to DSO is probably stronger than it's ever been. And that is a catalyst for tremendous growth and innovation in the industry. And I'm excited to see where these conversations continue, because I've made a lot of good relationships across different platforms that I didn't have before. And there's a lot of smart people in this industry. And if we work together, we're really going to be able to do something that's truly different. And we're going to be able to elevate dentistry from lagging behind medicine to catching up and partnering with medicine. And I look forward to that.
That's a fantastic vision. Thank you so much. Paul, I'd love to hear your thoughts here. And then Matt will take us home.
Yeah, I think what I'm most excited for in 2021 is, at least for Smile Brands, is how we are collectively going to advance our Safe Smile Space initiatives or objective. Well, you know, 2020 for us and for everyone else, right, is it wasn't just about a pandemic, but you had a pandemic plus a bunch of social unrest that really, I think, for Smile Brands was a call to action in a way that I've never seen in any other organization. And it brought the leadership team together in a way that I think I'm really looking forward to seeing how we move forward in 2021 with that, and really begin to make changes to be much more proactive, particularly around social justice, racial justice, equity, not just within our business, but also, you know, really being proactive and speaking out externally to the industry. And I think Lee said it really, really great point. He said, we all came together as an industry, and that's entirely true. And as we launched the Safe Smile Space and the precepts around it, I know Steve, for example, was engaged with a lot of the big industry partners and folks like Henry Schein and other DSOs, et cetera. Really trying to come together as an industry and say, you know what, enough's enough, and we got to say more, we got to do more. And I'm looking forward to what that looks like in 2021.
Great. And Matt, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think the panel's really said it well. You know, Jenna, Paul, and Lee, what we like to call our tent, right, is the people who are within our organization and in our industry are working together in a way that I've not seen before. And it's something I really actually like about dental, because it stands out from other industries about the degree of collaboration that's only really taken it to the next level. So as I look at our Safe Smile Space and the tent that we're all collectively under, be it the things that have happened with social unrest and systemic racism and COVID and all of what 2020's brought, I'm really looking forward to 2021. But it's because of that, is the opportunity too. The people who make dentistry work, the people who are providing the care to our patients are the real heroes, right? And so celebrating them and helping them create an environment where they can practice more, where they can create a great patient experience, where they can really touch patients and improve their lives. And you see it through a lot of different examples. I fundamentally believe that heat forges strength, and all this craziness we're going through right now is going to come out, we're going to come out better for it. And you just, as one example, you can point to the experience around patients today. You know, we've engaged and partnered with Smile Direct Club, which was a very bold and kind of different move for dentistry. And that we saw that patients, consumers really needed to be able to have options for relatively inexpensive, but very simple orthodontic care. As an industry, we weren't responding to that need in an effective way, in a way that met the patient's need. And as over time, things like Smile Direct Club and the use of AI within dentistry and the ability to create better experience that are tailored to patients' needs is kind of foundational. So I'm excited to really press into that and lean into that in 2021 and to do it with the people who are on this call and under our tent collectively.
Well, this has been a really fascinating and inspiring discussion. I'm so looking forward to connecting with you all in the future. Thank you, Lee, Matt, Paul, and Jenna for being here today. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yep. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.